Think of a string holding up, pulling up on the top of your head so that your spine is getting long and straight. And maybe your shoulders are a little thrown back, and your chin is a little tucked in. Let's first do a body relaxation. So direct your attention to the muscles around your eyes. I know I squint a lot, and maybe you do. And really direct your attention there and relax those muscles around your eyes. And also your forehead and your cheeks. Make sure you're not squinting. And go down to your nostrils. Try not to flare your nostrils. And then down to your lips. And down to your jaw. Don't be clenching your jaw. Just relax it. Relax your jaw. Relax your cheeks. Relax your eyes. Relax your forehead. Relax everything. Now let's move down to the neck. There's a lot of tension in our necks. You can wobble your head back and forth or up and down, like one of those bobblehead dolls. Let your neck be very relaxed. And now go down to your shoulders. A lot of tension also there. Just send your thoughts to your shoulders and let them relax. Down your arms, to your elbows, down to your wrist. You can move your hand around a couple times. Loosen up the wrist. Clench and unclench your fingers. Spread your fingers as far as they'll go. And now let's move back up to the chest. Now is a good time to take a very deep breath and let it out slowly. Just the one for now. Another deep breath. Keep your face soft. Now let's move down to the abdomen. Try not to hold your stomach in. No one's looking, so you can just let it hang out. Down to your hips. You can relax those. And then down your thighs. Down to your knees, all the way down to your ankles. Move your feet around a couple times. Scrunch up your toes a couple times. Spread them out. So try to make your whole body relaxed. 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 Now let's mentally relax. We've all been running around today, doing many important things and unimportant things. We have a lot on our mind. Just for now, put those thoughts away. And then think of the future. We've all been thinking of the future, what we have to do tonight, tomorrow, this week, this year, the rest of our lives. Just put those thoughts away too. If they're important, you'll remember them again. What we want to do is come to the very present moment. There's a good way to do that, is to listen first. It's pretty quiet right now, but sometimes you'll hear traffic going by, or you will hear your throat or nose wheezing, or your stomach will grumble, or your joints will crack. So right now, just listen intently for a moment. That will ground you in the present moment. Notice also if you smell anything, there might be a little leftover incense smell. Or if you feel anything, especially feel your bottom on the chair or on the cushion, or your arms on your sides, your feet on the ground. So feel grounded. And keep remembering to relax, just relax. So now that we've relaxed mentally and physically, let's start our loving kindness meditation. The Buddha said our loving kindness meditation is the very foundation of our practice. It's very important, very important. He said we can do all these wonderful things to get a good rebirth or a good life, but the most important thing is our loving kindness practice. He said our mind is pure. In its real state, it's pure and luminous. But it's been polluted by those three poisons, the attachment, the aversion, and delusion. And one way we can clear our mind of ill will or anger is to send loving kindness to ourselves and to others. So now do a little meditation about your heart. Think of your heart having a flame in it or a very bright light in your heart. Think of a time when you were very, very happy, maybe when you were a kid, maybe recently, maybe today. Try to engender that feeling again in your heart of happiness and contentment, maybe joy. So now visualize those, that bright light coming up to your brain, up to your mind, and send these thoughts to yourself. These three famous words, may I be well, may I be happy, may I be peaceful. May no harm come to me. May no difficulties come to me. May no illness come to me. May no anger come to me. May no suffering come to me. May I be well. May I be happy. May I be peaceful. Just think of that light coming up to your mind from your heart. Now let that light get even stronger now. Let it shine out of your heart. Think of a group around you, of your family and your close friends. Let that light shine upon them. Your loved ones, even if they're dead, think of them and send those thoughts to them. May my close friends and family be well, happy, and peaceful. May no harm come to them. May no difficulties come to them. May they be well. May they be happy and peaceful. Now let's make a bigger circle. Think of people that you may see quite often, but you don't really know them. Some of your neighbors, maybe, or your coworkers, the clerks in the store, postman or woman. Send those same thoughts to them. Extend these bright light to them. May my acquaintances be well. May they be happy and peaceful. May they be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May they live happily. Now extend that circle of light coming out of your heart to everyone in this room. May all of us be well, happy, and peaceful, free of ill will, free of anxiety, free of fear. May we always be well, free of illness. May I always be happy and contented, peaceful, calm, not afraid. May we be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. Just imagine that light spreading throughout this room. Let's do a really difficult thing. That's to think of someone who irritates you, that you have a bad opinion of. We want to send that loving kindness to that person, my difficult person. Very difficult to do. But it will help to clarify your mind. You can say, may my difficult person be well, happy, and peaceful. May no harm come to them, or difficulties or suffering. We want to remove the ill will in our hearts. And this is a good way to do it. Let's also now remember the animals, especially our pets. May my pets be well and happy and healthy, and spread out to the poor farm animals. They suffer a lot. and the wild animals, wherever they are, the fishes in the sea, the birds in the air, the insects, whatever living beings there may be, may they be free of suffering and fear. May they be contented. Free of suffering. Now let's extend those bright light that's coming out of our heart to cover all over Chicago, Illinois, the country, all around the world. Especially think of those poor people who are stuck in a war or a natural disaster, those who are dying, those who are being born, the near and the far, the gross and the subtle, seen and the unseen, the known and the unknown. Send those thoughts to them. May all living beings on this planet, may they be free of suffering, causes of suffering. Think of that light spreading all around the world. And now let's do what the Buddha recommended. Think of that light spreading as far in front of you as you can possibly imagine. Far, 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 all across the universe. And as far behind you as you can imagine. To the left, to the right, above you and below you, all the way around the entire universe. That light will spread. Whatever suffering beings there are, may they be free of suffering. May they be safe. May they be healthy. May they be happy. May they live in peace. Just let that light go all the way around the universe. Now let that light shrink back into your heart. As we end this part of the meditation, send those thoughts for one more time to yourself. May I be well, happy, and peaceful. May I be free of suffering, free of illness, free of fear, free of anger, free of ill will, free of stress. May I be well, happy, and peaceful. Now let's move on to our silent meditation. So adjust your posture if you want to. Make sure you're still sitting up straight. So when we have a silent meditation, we want to have an object upon which we can send our attention. And we're all breathing, I hope, so we can all send our attention to our breath. It sounds a little weird, but each breath we take is a little different from the one before it. So try to see the difference. You know, it might be deeper, more shallow, might be longer or shorter. Of course, immediately you'll notice your mind starts thinking of other things. That's totally normal. One part of the eight-part path is right concentration. So we want to bring our attention back to our breath. Those ideas, if they're important, you'll think of them later. Most of them are not important at all. Bring your attention back to the breath, however many times it takes. Just think of your breath. Focus on your breath. And keep coming back to your breath. Concentrate on your breath. Remember to keep your body relaxed. Don't tense up. Just relax. Just keep relaxing for another minute. Now slowly open your eyes and stretch a little bit. Come back to the present. Make a strong determination to do a little meditating every day. A good practice is every hour or so, just stop, check yourself, do a little meditation just for a few minutes or even a few seconds. Just check you're not getting angry or stressed out or having ill will or whatever. Just check yourself. You can check yourself now. You should be more relaxed. If you're not, then try to be more relaxed, both mentally and physically. So let's start our chanting. If we open our chanting book to page number 4, and just follow along with everyone else. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, dutiyampi buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, dutiyampi dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, dutiyampi sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, tatiyampi buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, Tatiyampi dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Anicca vata saṅkhāra upādavāya dhammino upājitvā nirujyanti tesaṁ upā samo sukho sabbe sattā avera hontu sabbe sattā abhyapaja hontu sabbe sattā aniga hontu sabbe sattā sukhi atanam pariharantu. Mano pumbang gama dama, mano seta, mano maya, manasache padutena, basatihwa karotihwa, tato nam dukkha manveti. Chakam vavahato padam mano pumbangama dhamma mano seta mano maya manasache pasanena basatihwa karotihwa tato nam sukha manveti chaya va anapayini. Mind is the foreign of all states. Mind is chief. Mind made are they. If with a corrupted mind one should either speak or act, suffering follows caused by that, as does the wheel follow the ox's hoof. Mind is a foreigner of all states. Mind is chief. Mind made are they. If with a clear and confident mind one should either speak or act, happiness follows caused by that as one shadow that never leaves. Let's read We Believe. We believe in generosity towards others. We believe the skillful, noble path is marked by generosity. We believe generosity has many levels. Think generously, speak generously, act generously. We believe generosity is a spiritual practice, and this practice allows us to become more open, accepting, and forgiving. We believe extending generosity to ourselves and others is a direct way of healing division, bringing joy, and nurturing this spiritual community for years to come. Let's say my wish. May I become at all times, both now and forever, a protector for those without protection, a guide for those who have lost their way, a ship for those with an ocean to cross, a sanctuary for those in danger, a lamp for those without light, a place of refuge for those who lack shelter, and a servant to all in need. By means of this meritorious deed, may I never join with the unwise, only the wise, until the time I attain Nirvana. All right, Lisa. It's your time. I'm going to give you this mic because I know it works.
Oh, thank you, Todd. When I started thinking about the talk today, it was a reflection on my stages of my spiritual growth. And I realized this wonderful place reflects it beautifully. My early journey was a Christian, Catholic-based one with Jesus and God. And, you know, here, Jesus is watching still over me. My second phase of my journey is with Buddha, and Buddha is to the right of me. So both are always here watching over me in my journey. In order, I think, to understand where my growth has come and how I have grown, a little bit about my background. In my youth into early 20s, I was a fearful young child and adult, of judgment, displeasing others. I came from a divorced home with, you know, we all have things. So, you know, there were things that I had to deal with. So I became a people pleaser very young to be accepted and loved. I thought that was the way to do it. And, you know, I went to Catholic schools my entire life. And it was quite a juxtaposition and foil. You know, on one hand, you know, if you sinned and had bad thoughts, you were going to be going to hell, you could be punished, you had had confession. And a priest must do it. But on the other hand, Jesus loved you and accepted you and forgave you. So it was kind of this strange mixture of growing up. So I took both those things and took them to heart. And as I grew older, though, after my Catholic school, and I taught CCD at a Catholic school as well in my 20s, I felt a bit of a hypocrite. Because here I was telling kids, teaching them to Vatican laws, you know, and I didn't necessarily believe in it, and I found flaws and holes in it. But, you know, I really believed if you questioned some of it, you questioned all of it. You had to just have that blind faith. And that's what faith was, having that blind faith and praying for hope, and it will come like a miracle out of the sky sometimes and save us from ourselves. But that really wasn't what happened. So I went into my 20s and 30s, still seeking acceptance and feeling insecure and, you know, trying to be a good person and pleasing others. But I had lost my faith and my way. I wanted so many things. I desired so many things, and it just wasn't happening. You know, the husband wasn't coming. You know, my family potential wasn't coming. My whatever I desired, I thought I wanted, just wasn't happening, and it was out of my control. And that, you know, turned into anger, resentment, feeling isolated. Now, on the outside, I still was my pleasant self, and I put on a good show. But internally, you know, then came the existential crisis we all face of, who am I? Why am I? Why am I here? Do I have a purpose? Will it shine? Will there be an omen one day to show me that there's a place for me on this planet? No omen, no lightning struck, nothing from above, no matter how many prayers came. So I kind of just drifted, and I worked hard, became a little bit of a workaholic, and put myself into helping others and service, believing, you know, I would find happiness and satisfaction by serving and giving to others. But really, nothing of myself came into that at that point. You know, and during that time, you know, I had one divorce and then a second marriage, and I have two beautiful sons from it. And that was all wonderful. But again, I thought, oh, this is my meaning, this is my purpose, this is going to give me my happiness. Being a mother, this is going to, and it's all going to be all right, and I'm loved unconditionally. Well, as we all know, that's not always what happens. And again, I said, oh, well, what is it again? So I was still feeling isolated. And this furthered into my 40s, still feeling, I'm great at repressing and suppressing, and that continued, but then phobia started to happen. I became afraid of driving in the snow because all the things Bonte told us, like all the what-if stories. Oh, my car's going to crash and I'll be in a ditch. Oh, no. Or I can't go into the water because a jellyfish is going to sting me, and so I better not go into the water. And I just became afraid of heights, and just a number of fears just piled and piled and piled on top of each other. So I declined opportunity after opportunity to enjoy moments I'd be with my family. Yeah, I'd be snorkeling, but I'd be terrified the whole time and always worrying and never enjoying the moment. I was never in the moment. I was always worrying about what's going to go wrong or what would happen. And that was never, it wasn't a good place to be. But on the outside, I was responsible. I did my job. I continued helping others. But I was an empty vessel without anything in me, never feeling connected or like I belonged yet, and thinking, when is it going to happen? Well, it happened during my phase two, when my kids moved out of the house, and I was in my early 50s. I know, midlife crisis, how original, right? But we moved and downsized, and here I moved to Woodstock, Illinois, in this beautiful new home with a new beginning. And then a bigger existential crisis happened. I'm going to retire soon, and life is, and I'm just going to have to, what is that going to be like? Where do I do? What do I go? Who am I? What will I become? What do I want in the next 20, 30 years of my life when I'm still cognitive and functioning and can do things, and be happy? I don't know. I'm a teacher. I'm a mother. I'm all these titles, but what am I? Who am I? And what am I when I don't have those things anymore? And the answer was emptiness. I did not know, and I did not have those answers. Because I had let myself become a lump of clay to be molded by everything around me to shape how I behaved and my perceptions. So here I am, a 50-something-year-old woman, feeling like I'm 13 again, trying to find myself. And here was the temple, phase two. When I entered the temple for the first time, I came out of need, out of desperation, out of needing peace so badly. And here I was. And I walked in the doors and I felt, this feels like home. This feels comfortable. This feels good. And I went through my first meditation, and I left feeling different. Like something had sparked, something had changed in me. Just unsaid and done. And I left and said, I'm going to come back again. And I learned over that time how to start meditating. I listened to Bhante Asaji and Bhante Sujatha with the Dharma talks, and I started to exploring what was inside of me and what I wanted and who I authentically was for the first time in 50 years of life. And I realized that this was the beginning of a wonderful lifelong. And three years later, I'm here. And my friends who I've known for years say, you are such a different person than when you were 3 years ago. You're more positive and confident, and there's a joy about you. And I was like, wow, you can see that? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, okay, well, I guess insight does manifest out. I started reading and educating myself on Buddhism because meditation just wasn't enough. It was too superficial. I wanted to know the foundation of Buddha and the teachings and the history to have a real understanding of what it meant. I started my journey of spiritualism here, I would say. And I read books like Taming of the Tiger Within, which was heavily influential, by Thich Nhat Hanh. Sorry, I tried to do my best. And this became the Eight Noble Path was, read it every night by my bed and took notes and kept journals and little art diaries of different things. And I would set goals for myself, like, all right, this week we're going to focus on this reading and really practice to do well at this. So I'm going to share some of the quotations from the book that highly inspired some things in me that I had to work with. The Caller Challenge, The Power of Introspection. from the tiger within. Before we can make deep changes in our lives, we have to look deep into our diet, our ways of consuming. We have to live in such a way that we stop consuming the things that poison us and intoxicate us. Then we will have the strength to allow the best in us to arise, and we will no longer be victims to anger and frustration. That started it. And I thought, what toxins am I taking in every day? Who's toxic in my life? What am I believing and not believing that they're telling me? And I started trusting my inner self and reflecting. Is it too much TV even? How am I wasting my time not to be productive? Why am I eating these unhealthy foods that bring me joy but are not healthy and causing me, you know, to have a high blood pressure or things that I know are not good? Why am I gossiping and partaking in negative talk at work about people? Or why am I, you know, feeling resentful because someone at work got acknowledged and had something wonderful? Why am I worrying? You know, why am I not just happy for them and celebrating them? You know, and that started me to really reflect and think about how I wanted to change and set goals. So I journaled and I kept goals. And when I failed and I regressed, I forgave myself and said, all right, this is a challenge and a learning lesson. We are not going to do that again. We're going to be stronger the next time. I called myself we. But you know, I did that. And it was a slow, gradual change, imperceptible. But it built and it built. And then, I know I always thought taking care of oneself was being selfish. Like, oh, if I take care of myself or put myself before other people at times, I'm being selfish, and being selfish is not good. And I had to learn how to rethink that about myself and my practice. And Taming of the Tiger Within, I love these because they're short, small, easy to understand. And being young in the practice of Buddhism, I read some of the more advanced stuff, and I was like, oh, I don't understand this. It doesn't help me. So, you know, I used my little book, and it broke it down. And so did the Bhantes, of course. In taking good care of yourself, you take good care of your beloved one. Self-love is the foundation for your capacity to love the other person. If you don't take good care of yourself, if you are not happy, if you are not peaceful, you cannot make the other person happy. You cannot help other persons you cannot love. Your capacity for loving another person depends entirely on your capacity for loving yourself, for taking care of yourself. So I learned how to say no when I couldn't do something or when people who were doing too, I have some demanding people in my life, I think we all do, and I learned to set boundaries and say no, that is not my problem, no, I will not help you with that, that's something that's not mine, but I'll help you this way or that way. And I started to exercise more, and I started to make time to meditate and eat better diets and prepare better meals. And I felt better. And then I did realize, you know, I do have the energy to give at work, at home more, because I was sleeping better, eating better, taking better care of myself. And I stopped feeling guilty for taking care of myself first. You know, and when toxic people said, well, you know, you're being selfish. You're not caring anymore. I was like, no, I'm helping you be responsible for you. I love and care for you, but this is something you need to do for you. And not feel bad about that. And that was part of my spiritual practice and part of the Buddhist, you know, absorbing that all in. And then I started realizing I did have faith in the Buddhist practices. I felt connected for once. I felt I belonged somewhere. I had a place, a purpose. And it didn't matter what next year would bring or 2 years from now or 15 years from now. I have a purpose just because I am here existing and working with people and touching lives in ways. Who knows how I'm impacting? But that's not for me to worry about. I just have to keep being kind and mindful and giving and forgiving of people and accepting of people, and maybe that's just what all our purpose is, and then maybe that's enough. Maybe we don't need more. Maybe I'm enough. Maybe this is enough. And tomorrow will take care of itself. Of course, we have to plan ahead. But I stopped all the what ifs and all the stories of disaster and ruin and what could go wrong, and started building stories of what could go right or what could happen in the better to replace those stories. And I became more resilient, and that faith just extends out. And I have a lump of my Sangha here. You know, this is what it is. So taming the tiger within. When you have faith, you have a lot of energy. When you believe in something really good, true, and beautiful, you are alive. I feel alive. I don't feel like the walking dead. I feel authentically alive for the first time, not going through the motions that I'm supposed to do, but living my true life in a way respectful with others. And it feels good to feel alive and wake up in the morning and say, yeah, life isn't perfect, but I'm alive, and there's beauty and gratitude in this world. And it's okay. Imperfection is a beautiful thing. And being mindful is probably one of the most areas of growth that I had to be careful of. You know, a lot of that anger and resentment, you don't mean to be unmindful of others, but it comes out, it seeps out, because it's a toxin. And it comes out at times you don't mean it to. When you say the wrong thing, or you want to blame other people for what you don't want to accept in yourself, we are not mindful. And I became very careful of how I talk to my students, my kids, my mother, my sister and my family, my friends. You know, I'm a very quiet, introspective, private person. So honestly, me being up here is quite, this is part of my growth. You know, it's hard for me to say I love you, or, you know, like, you are so special to me in life. What would I do without you? And I just realized I need to be mindful to let people know I love them and appreciate them and see the beauty and the goodness in my relationship with them and just enjoy those moments with them mindfully and not think about tomorrow or the next day or what I'm doing 50 minutes from now, or just fully embrace the moment with them and take that little snapshot in my mind and hold it dear to my heart for those happy moments when I need them. And with Taming of the Tiger Within, the practice of mindfulness leads to concentration and insight. Insight is a fruit of practice, which can help us to forgive, to love. And in a period of 15 minutes or half an hour, the practice of mindfulness, concentration, insight can liberate you from anger and turn you into a loving person. That is the strength of Dharma, the miracle of Dharma. So instead of holding a grudge or being angry for 2 days, I let it go. Or I've learned to, again, this may not seem a lot to some people, and this is part of my spiritual learning as well, learning to embrace the anger and acceptance of that and talking to people honestly and saying when I'm upset, like, hey, we need to talk because I'm upset. And not just holding it in. And then building up all that tension, ruining my relationships. Having the courage to tell some really difficult people, like, hey, we have to have a talk. This isn't working for me, or I need us to cooperate here. Knowing what might happen. Or when I have to discipline a kid in my classroom, how do I do it respectfully and not break their spirit, but get them to do what I, you know, to work with me? And when I'm not mindful and I slip, or, you know, I have to remind myself, that's okay. You know what you did, apologize and be mindful next time. Which, again, is part of the Buddhist practice. It's a forever practice. We always have to practice mindfulness. I think whether you're a practitioner of 3 months, 3 years, 20 years, we must always know, remember that. You know, like Bhante says, it's not what we do on the cushion, it's what we do when we leave here and what we take with us. So I guess I'm going to conclude. I want to make sure I have 3 minutes, so I'm staying in time. My journey has been one of acceptance and love, forgiveness of others and myself. Looking at we are all part of one connected universe, and we're all here for each other, and really forgiving completely in the heart, mind, and soul, and moving on to better places. And try not to, and to be honest and authentic, and have gratitude, and to take chances and risks, and not be afraid as much. I have a long way and long journey ahead of me, and I assume I will have one until the day I die, and who knows what goes beyond. But I'm still thankful for the Buddhist teachings and philosophies, because they truly, I think, have made me a more peaceful person and understanding happiness is not momentary, it's the contentment of life. Thank you for listening.